ース。You can't sleep? You want me to read you some more of the story? Okay. Let me... Let me turn on the light. God. You already have the book out? Alright, hand it over. Now just lay down next to me and we'll go from where we left off. It was early the next morning and still dark when Beauty and her father left home. They rode all day, huddled together for warmth through snow-packed fields and icy forest until night fell and the magnificent palace appeared before them. Yeah, you're fine right there. In the stables, there was fresh hay again. Then Mr. Fortune led Beauty to the vast hall where the candles shone like fireflies, and the log blazed in the hearth and the great table. This time was set for two. They picked at the food in unhappy, nervous silence. Mr. Fortune was too sad to speak, and Beauty, though she wanted to be brave, felt horribly frightened, knowing that soon the beast would come. She did not have long to wait. She felt it first, like a cold darkness in the room. Something was watching. And then she gasped as the monstrous creature emerged, towering high above them, its claws dragging across the floor with a screech that set her teeth on edge and its sour smell catching at her nose. It was unspeakably ugly, and it spoke, or rather growled, in a voice so hoarse it hurt her to listen. "Did you choose to come here of your own free will?" the beast asked. Beauty could hardly speak for trembling, but she managed to nod her head. "Then you are welcome," said the beast. It breathed in deeply, as if it would say more to her. But instead, it turned abruptly to Mr. Fortune. "Your daughter's love has saved your life. Say goodbye before you sleep. You will leave before she wakes." There was silence. The sound had gone. The smell had gone. The beast had gone. The beauty stared after him. "How strange," she thought. "He could not look at me. It made no sense. but at least she was alive and hadn't fainted in fear. "It will be all right," she whispered to her weeping father. "It will be all right." And they fell asleep where they sat, worn out with tension and grief. When Beauty raised her head from the table the next morning, she knew that she was on her own. She sat absolutely still for a moment, her heart quaking as she thought of the monster who held her prisoner. "He will not break my spirit," she vowed. "I will not show him any fear, only that I despise him for his cruelty and loathe him for his ugliness." And having made this brave decision, Beauty stood and made her way upstairs to find a room in which she might unpack her small case from home. She felt dwarfed by the enormous staircase, and at the top, by the echoing vastness of the great passageway that led off in each direction as far as the eye could see. As she hesitated, unsure which way to turn, she saw a door straight in front of her on which, as if a glowing magic hand, were written the words, "Beauty's room." "So this is my prison cell," thought Beauty "So this is my prison cell," thought Beauty gloomily. Turning the handle and stepping into a room that was so unlike anything she had imagined that she thought she must be dreaming. It was not a cell at all, not dark or dank or tiny or cold. There were no heavy manacles hanging from the walls or iron bars across filthy windows. It was instead quite the most astonishingly luxurious room Beauty had ever seen, or rather, series of rooms, for each led into another, all as splendid as the last. The gorgeous bedroom with its vast, plump bed led to the dressing room, where tall wardrobes were filled with marvelous outfits, all a perfect fit. There was a huge, warm bathroom with scented oils of every color, and a bright sitting room with enough soft sofas and rugs for every day of the year. In the music room waited an entire orchestra of harpsichords and violins and cellos and flutes and oboes, all humming quietly in tune as Beauty entered, as if to say, "Welcome, let's play." And a great dance floor stretched invitingly across the room. A great library was stacked floor to ceiling with every book she had ever heard of, and many more she hadn't. Beauty gazed around in delight and gasped and put her mouth to her and put her hand to her mouth and said, "Oh!" For suddenly it occurred to her that the beast would never have gone to so much trouble if he had meant to kill her. At least, not immediately. And so she might as well enjoy it while it lasted. "My only wish," she thought, "is that I could see my beloved father and my dear sisters." And immediately there appeared a mirror on the wall in which, to her astonishment, she saw Mr. Fortune safely back home, while Hermione and Gertrude paraded before him in their new finery. "Thank you, Beast," said Beauty to herself. "You are kinder than you look." By the time Beauty had finished exploring and delighting in every marvelous detail, it was growing dark. At once, candles flickered into light, and by their warm glow she treated herself to a luxurious foamy bath. Then she selected a perfectly exquisite dress from the wardrobe and went downstairs to supper. The great hall looked magnificent in the candlelight, and a delicious meal was laid out on the table. But as Beauty took her seat, the clock chimed 9, and there came the terrible, dragging sound of the beast's approach. And she felt sick with a fear that she struggled not to show as he appeared. For a moment, there was silence. While Beauty prayed he would not harm her, but then the beast spoke in his low, rasping voice. "Beauty," he said, "may I join you?" Beauty's head spun, and for a moment she thought she would faint. What did he want? What was she meant to say? Then she summoned all her courage, looked straight at him, heavens he was ugly, and answered as calmly as she could. "I'm sure you'll do whatever you want," she said, surprising herself with her boldness, and immediately worrying that she might have made him angry. "No," he answered shortly, as if trying to control himself. "Everything here is for your pleasure alone. I will leave you if you wish." Beauty was amazed. What could he mean? But before she could answer, he went on, his face twisted away from hers. "I hope you like your rooms. I can tell you find me too ugly to bear in any case." "Yes, no," stammered Beauty, not wanting to lie or offend, for he seemed to almost be in pain. "That is, you seem very kind, and your palace is lovely, but it is true that you are..." "I am hideous," said the beast angrily, rising to his feet as if he could not bear to be with her any longer. "Perhaps," said Beauty. She was shocked by the bitterness in his voice and groped for some words of comfort. "But looks aren't everything, and..."
"Aren't they?"
he snapped. And suddenly the atmosphere was very different. Threatening, uncertain, dangerous. Beauty shrank back, the hairs rising on her neck as the beast leaned towards her. She could see him with awful clarity now. He was so close. Great, strong teeth, the huge nose, the pitiless eyes in which she saw herself reflected like a tiny flower floating on a deep black pond. As she gazed in fear, she heard the beast speak. "Then will you marry me?" Beauty stared in horror, barely able to make sense of the words. "No," she shrieked. "No, leave me alone, no." In the beast's eyes, she saw her reflection shimmer as the black ponds brimmed with tears. And then the beast turned away with a sigh that echoed around the gray hall and up the stairs until it filled the whole palace with sorrow. "Farewell, Beauty," said the beast as he left her. And Beauty's dreams that night were so full of... And Beauty's dreams that night were full of the strange, sad monster who seemed so hateful and yet so full of hurt, so eager to please and so easy to pain. The next day and the day after it were as full of wonder and surprise for Beauty as her first. Her rooms never ceased to delight and amaze her, and there always seemed to be another one to discover. There were rooms for the day and rooms for the night, rooms for every whim or pleasure. There was a sewing room in which she practiced embroidery and made fine tapestries. All the needles there threaded themselves for her convenience, and no pin ever pricked her thumb. There was the aviary, filled with birds that sang the mysterious songs of the sky as they built their elaborate nests, and where she made friends with a splendid parrot who perched on her shoulder. There was the monkey room, where she laughed until she wept at the antics of the chimpanzees, and the hammock room, and the painting room, and the extraordinary window room that every day had a different view of the gardens, no matter how often she visited it. Then there were the gardens themselves, which looked even more astonishing now that the snow had all melted away, and their full glory could be seen blossoming in the warm sunshine. Beauty would ride or walk for hours, or on lazy afternoons, lie back in a boat while the winding river carried her along past meadows and orchards, pagodas, pavilions, and knot gardens. There were fountains to splash in and waterfalls to sit beneath, mazes to explore, trees to climb, and the stunning colors of a million flowers to dazzle the eye. Everywhere, proud, strutting peacocks spread their magnificent tails, chattering excitedly amongst themselves at beauty's approach. And shy young deer, learned to nuzzle her curiously with their warm, wet noses as the days passed into weeks, and the weeks into months. And they lost their fear of the stranger in their midst. Nor was Beauty afraid anymore. She knew the beast would not hurt her. He was never anything but courteous and kind, and concerned only for her happiness. She had even grown used to his looks, the thick mane of hair, his long, clawed fingers, the strangely shy way he walked. They never met by day, but each evening, as the clock struck 9, he would appear and ask if he may join her at her meal. Far from dreading his visits, Beauty found herself looking forward to them with pleasure, for he was good company. She had grown to like him more than she had ever imagined possible. There was only one problem. Every evening, without fail, the beast would ask her the same terrible question, "Will you marry me?" It was the one thing Beauty dreaded above all, but she knew she must say no, and she knew how much it hurt him as he turned away, always with his heart rending a sigh. But still he would ask again the next night, and the night after, like a starving man torturing himself with dreams of food. After 3 months, Beauty could bear it no longer. "Beast," she said that evening, "please don't ask me again. It upsets me so much to cause you pain, but I can never love you. I treasure you as a dear, kind friend. Please be happy with that, and do not spoil it by wanting more." The beast was silent for a time, his head bowed. "I would not hurt you for any price," he said at last. "Forgive me. He raised his eyes to Beauty, and for a moment she feared she had wounded him beyond repair. So wounded and broken did he seem. But then he seemed to find courage, and somehow she knew he would say what he would say even before he spoke. "I will not ask you again, I promise. Your company is a greater blessing than I ever hoped for. I ask you only one thing. If you are happy to be my friend, please promise that you will never leave me alone." Beauty was deeply touched and would willingly have granted his request, but she could not. That very morning, she had seen into the magic mirror that her father was desperately ill with worry about her, and she longed to go home and nurse him. "I cannot be happy here," she explained. "While my father is sick, my heart aches for him. And my heart aches for you," said the beast once more. "But if I send you to your father, you will surely stay there. And then your poor beast will die of grief." He looked so sad sitting there. She reached forward and touched his paw where it lay heavy on the table. "Dear beast," she said. It was the first time she had ever felt the rough, coarse fur, and she was amazed to see how pale and delicate her hand looked against it. "I will not stay there," she said softly. "I promise to come back. I only want to make sure that my father is all right, and to show him that I am well and happy." 1 week. Then I will return. Gently she stroked his paw, then carefully removed her hand, for the beast was trembling in a kind of torment and twisting his hands from side to side. When at last he stilled himself, his words were so quiet that Beauty had to lean forward to hear. "You will be there tomorrow when you wake." "Sorry," he said in a flat, exhausted tone. There was no hope or happiness in it. She knew only that he had to make a decision beyond her understanding, and that it had cost him deeply, dearly. Then he reached out towards her. "Keep this ring safe," he said, handing her a simple gold band. "Place it on your pillow when you wish to return. But I beg you not to forget your promise. 1 week." And then, before she could say anything, the beast walked away with a sigh more sad and weary than any she had ever heard him utter, pausing only for one long last look at Beauty before he disappeared. Beauty cried herself to sleep that night, for it was awful to be so fond of the beast and to cause him such pain. But when she awoke the next morning, all thoughts of sadness disappeared at once. She was, to her sheer delight and wonder, in her old bed at home, with the sun shining in the window and outside the fields stretching into the distance, rich with crops ready for harvest. Beauty ran downstairs to the parlor, and there was Mr. Fortune, scarcely able to believe his eyes at the sight of his beloved daughter. They hugged, laughing and weeping, and the tears seemed to wash the lines of worry and age from old Mr. Fortune's face until his cheeks glistened with a happiness the beauty could scarcely remember. Eventually, Hermione and Gertrude appeared as well. They had been woken by the noise of Beauty and her father, dancing for joy, and both of them were in extremely bad tempers. "Be quiet, can't you?" snapped Hermione. "Some of us are trying to sleep," added Gertrude, before they both stared at Beauty and said disgustedly, "What are you doing here?" Their moods were not improved when Beauty told them. In fact, they were furious. It was just so unfair. Here they were, stuck in the country, living the most tedious life imaginable, with a dull old father who spent all his time sick with worry about while their horrid little sister, who deserved to die for her stupidity, was luxuriating in a magical palace. Same thing, right? You know, I never really got the difference. Sorry. Was luxuriating in a magical palace, waited on hand and foot, with no end of riches and entertainments to amuse her. Oh, they hated her, the ghastly little minx. But soon they worked out a way to get her back at her. "Let's make her stay," said Hermione, "for more than a week." Gertrude clapped her hands with pleasure. "Oh, yes," she said, smiling. "That will make the beast so angry that it might kill her." Hermione spat viciously. "But what can we do? How can we do it?" asked Gertrude. "Let's pretend that we're pleased to see her," said Hermione. "She won't be able to resist." From that moment on, Beauty's sisters treated her with such a show of love and kindness that she was quite overwhelmed. They brought her tea in bed, they laughed at all her jokes, and then they scowled behind her back. Mr. Fortune was quite recovered as well, and Beauty was so happy that she knew it would be hard to leave, though she did miss the bear and a great deal. On the morning she was meant to go, however, Hermione and Gertrude burst into tears and wept uncontrollably, pleading with Beauty to stay and think of them and their poor dear father. Little did Beauty know that they had rubbed their eyes with onions to make themselves cry. But it was so convincing that Beauty, moved by their tears, agreed to stay a day longer. Each morning, Beauty's sisters rubbed their eyes with onions until the false tears came. And each night, they wept with laughter at the success of their plan. And every day, Beauty agreed to stay a little longer, though she worried more and more about her promise to the beast and was troubled by a strange sadness whenever she thought of him. It was on her 10th night at home that Beauty finally understood what she had done. In the mirror, as she brushed her hair before bed, her reflection disappeared, and she saw instead, as if from a great height, the beast's palace bathed in pale moonlight. And then suddenly there was the beast himself, bathed in... Lying beside the river in a part of the garden Beauty had never seen. He looked ill and wretched, and his eyes were full of hopeless, gloomy agony that Beauty knew was all her fault. For a moment, she was unable to breathe with the shock. "I must go at once," she thought. "I have hurt him. I have stayed away too long. Forgive me, beast, I am coming. Quickly, she laid the ring he had given her on the pillow. And the next thing she knew, it was moving. No, I'm not falling asleep. Just taking a little break. Okay, I'm sorry. But it was colder than she remembered, and she looked out of the window. She saw that snow had fallen and the trees were bare against a gray sky. Her room seemed cheerless and faded, like a song that had lost its tune. Beauty could not settle, for she longed to see the beast again. She was so excited at the prospect that the day passed all too slowly. As evening fell, she put on the most beautiful dress she could find, hoping nervously that it would please him. But there was no food laid out on the table when she went down. And when at last the longed for hour approached and the clock struck 9, the beast did not appear. Now panic seized Beauty's heart like a cold fist. What was wrong? Where was he? He would die of grief, he had said, if she did not return. But surely those were just words. He was here now. She needed him. Beast, she shouted, running through the palace as fast as she could. Beast, I'm here. But every room was locked and silent, and only her echoes answered with their false, fading life. Frantically, Beauty tried to think. She must find him before it was too late. Outside, he'd been outside in the mirror. But everything was strange in the dark night as she ran, stumbling and calling, tears pouring down her cheeks, until at last she could run no more and she fell, her heart thumping against her chest, and howled her grief at the cruel motion, or at the cruel moon. And then she saw him. He lay by the river just as he had the night before, silent and unmoving. Snow had begun to settle on him like a blanket, softening his shapes, burying him in its cold, gentle flakes. Yeah. No, sobbed Beauty. No, Beast, no. She hurled herself across his body, desperately brushing the snow away, knowing that she was losing him. Feeling him slip away. Don't let go, Beast, she cried. I'm here. Stay with me. Don't go. But she knew it was hopeless. Even as the Beast stirred one last time, his eyes flickered open. He looked at her, and Beauty would have given anything to keep him there. You broke your promise, he said faintly. It is too late, but you have come, and I die happy because I have seen you again. Then his eyes closed, and Beauty stared in horror as his body went limp into her arms. No, she cried, hot tears running down her cheeks. Into his face. No, I'm fine. His face. Not now. Please not now. Listen to me. Beast, you must not die. I love you. Stay with me, Beast. I love you. Beauty was sobbing uncontrollably now. She had found love and lost it. It was so much more than she had ever imagined. The pain was unbearable. He was ugly, but he was beautiful. The most beautiful thing she had ever known. And now, she couldn't tell him how she loved his eyes and his mouth and his crooked nose, his shy kindness and the way he walked with his huge hands because he slipped away. I love you, she cried, and her eyes were swimming with tears and the white snow was dazzling and he had gone. I love you, she repeated, as if the words would bring him back, when the world was melting with grief and her heart bursting with pain. And it was too late. She felt herself slipping down, dissolving into sorrow. Only now someone was lifting her, and snow was falling on her cheek, but it was warm like tears. And someone was whispering in her ear and gently asking, will you be my wife? Oh, yes, I will, she said. Then open your eyes, she heard. And as Beauty blinked away her tears, it seemed to her that the sky changed and filled with dazzling black and whatever. Oh, God. No, I'm fine. Jeez, stop asking me. Just need my eyes to have a little break every once and then. Okay, I'll start that bit over. Then open your eyes, she heard. And as Beauty blinked away her tears, it seemed to her that the sky was filled with dazzling light, and before her was no beast, but a handsome prince whose dark eyes she knew and loved and in which she wanted to stay forever. Now you see me as I really am, he said. Your love has saved me from a terrible spell. I was turned into a beast, and only a heart that loved me for myself could set me free. Well, you are very handsome now, said Beauty with a smile. But I loved you anyway, the way you were. She stroked his smooth cheek and his strong hands, pleased to see that his nose was still a little bent. And his eyes just as deep, for he looked so much more interesting than the picture book prince she had always imagined. And I love you now, she added, leaning forward to kiss him, more than words can ever describe. And very soon afterwards, they were married, and of course they lived happily ever after, for they had earned their love, and love that is earned lasts a long time. About that, there really is no more to say. But there are some pictures of the wedding and of the happy couple walking arm in arm. The delighted Mr. Fortune will show you them, beaming with pride at an opportunity to give them to at any opportunity you give him. Aren't they splendid, he'll say, unable to control himself. Always knew she'd make an always knew she'd make an excellent match. Best son-in-law you could hope for. Happiest day of my life. Helped introduce him myself. Fabulous gardener. Brilliant with his roses. You know how they met, of course. No. Have I never told you the story of Beauty and the Beast? The end. Glad you liked the story. Glad you find my voice so soothing. Sweet dream.